everybody, and welcome to Movie Crush. Charles W. Chuck Bryant here, once again in New York City at my home away from home, CDM Studios, guest producer Charles in the house. And this week, I was lucky enough to sit down and talk to Beth Newell. And Beth is the co-founder of the great, great satirical comedy website, Reductress. If you don't know Reductress, get on over there and check it out. It's very funny. I guess the sort of the way I usually describe it is it's like the Onion. It's like the feminist Onion. So if you like good satire and good comedy, then the Reductress website is the way to go. They're really great and super nice. And it's just super great what they've accomplished, her and Sarah, just starting this website. And it's really grown into a genuine thing. They're now writing books. They have a great new podcast out called The Reductress Minute. So you can find that wherever you get your podcast. I've listened to that. They sent me an early version, and it's very funny. So definitely check that out. And Beth is—I met Beth through my friend, her husband, Peter. Peter McNerney was on our TV show, the Old Stuff You Should Know TV show, back in the old days. Peter's a very talented and funny comedian, improv actor here in New York. And we cast Peter out of New York. He came to Atlanta. We became good pals there. Peter is so funny. He also runs the Story Pirates podcast for Gimlet. Peter's just an all-around great guy, and he and Beth are wonderful. They have two wonderful children. And I also hung out with Beth at Max FunCon last year and got to know her a little better on her own, and she's just terrific. Very warm and friendly and funny, even though she says she's not warm in this very podcast. She's lying because she is warm. She's a very sweet person. So we were able to talk about Bridget Jones' Diary, a movie I had never seen before until last night, and I loved it. I thought it was really great and a very fun and funny, charming movie, which my wife also loves, so I can't wait to get home and talk to Emily about it as well. So here we go with Beth Newell on Bridget Jones' Diary. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Lynnfield, Massachusetts, which is like 20 minutes north of Boston.
Okay. So is that technically a suburb?
Yeah, that's a suburb.
So you would go into Boston?
Not a lot. You know, occasionally. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't, I don't know. I was like the middle child, and I feel like didn't occur to me until too late that I should have been like trying to leave.
Right.
We were in this weird, even though we were pretty close to Boston, we were in this weird secluded town that like sort of is very towny and like tries to build barriers around itself. So they had no public transportation.
Right.
So unless you like rode your bike like a whole town over or something, there was no way you were going to get into Boston.
So you couldn't like jump on a train or anything?
No.
But if you had everything, I know some of those towns because I lived in New Jersey, mm-hmm. and they would have in these townships all the stuff you needed so you didn't have to go into New York. Like they had the theater and...
Yeah. See, we had none of that. It was so Lynnfield is next to Lynn, which is like a city, and Lynnfield was like originally the fields, like the farms of Lynn or something. So it's like, I don't know, they just like never built anything up. And even like the convenience store was like pretty tiny. There was nothing. So it was like by design, though, I think like the zoning laws, they were like, we're going to keep this town small and secluded. Mm-hmm. And like, I think at one point when I was growing up, my parents were talking about how like they weren't even following like the housing zoning laws. Like there's some, you know, laws that there should be like a certain amount of low income housing or something. And they were just like totally shirking it to like keep it quiet.
What did your parents do?
Or
what do they do?
My mom is still a nurse. My dad originally, he had a couple different jobs, but he always worked in radio doing a couple different things. He worked at an AM station in Massachusetts where he would kind of like run their, he would like program like a series of long like music stuff for the weekends. Like this would be like big band Frank Sinatra type stuff. And he would just like set up a few hours of music for them. I feel like there was like no one in the studio. Like it was just kind of like running. And then he also would do the play-by-play for like college basketball games at like BC and BU. And that was at a different radio station, but.
So was he, how did you get into comedy stuff? How'd you become a funny person?
probably his influence mainly because he would, when I was really young, he would tape SNL episodes on the weekend, and then we would watch them later. I was pretty into that, and he would, you know, we would watch movies and stuff.
Nice.
Yeah.
Siblings?
I had an older brother who passed away years ago, and a younger sister. So
was there family movie time then?
Yeah, sort of. Definitely when we were younger. I think my parents would rent movies.
Yeah.
But we didn't have a lot of movies in the house. Like, that wasn't something that our family spent money on.
Right.
And we, like, that actually when I got older, like, when I did get older to, like, old enough to, like, be dropped off at the mall, one time I bought some VHSs and came home, and it was, like, a huge argument where my dad was like, we don't spend money on movies.
Really?
Yeah, because it's like, I don't, we're like, it's a very thrifty New England family, uh-huh. like where, you know, people sometimes would like rinse out Ziploc bags to reuse
them. Oh, yeah.
Like,
we were like that too.
Yeah. And so, and it's really funny because my dad was always so into music, and mm-hmm. he would have like 10 different radios around the house. Like, he just like was, there are certain things he loves to spend money on, and then everything else is like, he doesn't understand why anyone would ever spend money on it.
Right.
So that was like a big thing growing up, where he would just like roll his eyes at whatever like the latest thing was that we wanted. Uh-huh. And he was like, no.
Yeah.
So, he took the VHS I bought at the mall and returned it to the store.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Do you remember what movie it was?
It was School Ties. And I don't know if like that was part of the reason, because it was like semi-adult movie.
Was that the anti-Semitic, not anti-Semitic,
yes,
but about,
yeah,
Amy, Brendan Fraser.
It's Brendan Fraser, who looks not at all Jewish, plays a Jewish student.
Right.
And then
a bunch of other, like, super famous dudes.
Yeah,
right?
It's like Matt Damon, Ben Affleck.
Right.
Again, part of the appeal, I was like a tween, and there's like dude showering scenes, right. I think. I was like, this is great.
Yeah. Nothing hotter than a shower,
yeah,
scene.
Yeah, so I don't know if my dad fully knew that that was in the movie, but he was like, we do not spend money on movies.
And how old were you when you bought that?
I'm guessing like 12 or 13.
That's adorable.
Yeah.
And had you heard there was a shower scene? So that's why you got it?
No, I don't think so. I think I realized that after I watched it, but it was, what happened was I bought it, my dad made me return it, and my friend felt so bad for me that she bought it for me as a birthday present later.
That's nice.
So then
and you hid it in your room?
No, then I like waved it in my dad's face. I was like, you can't return it. But yeah, sorry, what was the question? The reason I bought it. The reason I bought it was because I was a huge Brendan Fraser fan.
Oh, he's like, I've been reading about him lately.
You read that interview with him?
I did.
His Vogue?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I was really impressed with that interview, and it sort of made sense of a lot of things.
He seems like a good guy. Like, I think, and I was never like a Brendan Fraser guy at all, but in reading this, like, I think people root for him.
Yeah, he's definitely really sympathetic in a way. Yeah, I had a huge crush on him for years, and it was like, everyone else at school was into like Leonardo DiCaprio or Josh Hartnett or something like that, and I was like, I like this goofy, weird guy.
Right.
And then
Encino Man.
Yeah, and I like thought I was such a weirdo, and now that I've worked at Reductress, we've had two other editors, Anna Dresden and Rachel Winitsky, who also had huge crushes on him as a kid. And I'm like, oh, this is just like a nerd girl thing. Like,
right.
So.
Yeah, because he wasn't. Well, he was hunky for sure.
He was definitely hunky, but I think he was just so goofy.
Yeah.
I don't know.
He was in some good movies too. I mean, you have the Encino Man stuff, but Gods and Monster was really good.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was one other really good one.
I think The Mummy holds up as an action movie.
I never saw that.
Oh, really?
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
When did that come out? I always try to decide why I didn't see movies.
It's probably like 2002. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what I was doing then. It got by me somehow. But what you were saying before about the shower thing, I've had a lot of conversations on the show about how, but we've never really explicitly talked about it, but it feels like kids, a lot of times, that's how they sort of poke around with sexuality,
mm-hmm.
is through these movies, because, I mean, sometimes people had parents that were just very openly talked about, you know, the birds and the bees and stuff.
Yeah.
But my parents certainly didn't. So that was kind of where you learned about a lot of this stuff.
Right. Yeah.
For better or for worse, I think.
Yeah.
Probably for worse.
Probably mostly for worse.
Not that
too.
I think about it.
I think especially when you look back on those like early 80s and 90s movies, like the way like the teen movies handled sex and stuff is like so weird.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's problematic to look at a bunch of those movies.
It's always coercive. Like it's always like, we just got to trick this girl or like,
yeah.
I don't know.
I know it is. And just before you were here, Paul Schneider was in here and we talked about Back to the Future was his pick. And again, another movie, when you look back on it, it's like, wait a minute, there was an attempted rape that I will say this, so they didn't play it lightly. Like looking at it as an adult, it was a scary scene and a light movie, but they played it for scary. Like Leah Thompson had real fear in her eyes when he opens that door. But
I don't know if it's getting better, though. Like I... I've like not watched a lot of like sitcoms lately, and then I'm trying to sort of get back into it to see what's out there. And I was watching this new one, this new sitcom last night called Good Girls, and they have a plot point where, again, there's like an attempted rape situation, and it's like the pilot episode of a sitcom.
Yeah.
And you're just like, why? I was just like, how is this happening here right now? It's just, yeah. I don't know.
So it's a straight up comedy?
Yeah, I think it's meant to be. Yeah.
So it wasn't like the Different Strokes episode where something really bad happened.
No.
And they treated it, you know.
I mean, I think what they're trying to do with Good Girls is like, it's like Breaking Bad if it were women and a comedy, like a lighter.
Interesting.
Like, I don't, it's very, I don't know.
Any good?
I think the verdict is still out. I don't know.
Okay.
I said I haven't been watching a lot of sitcoms, so sometimes it's hard for me to tell, like, is this the norm of TV or is this weird? Because, like, two of the main characters just have, like, really prominent cleavage through the entire episode.
Right.
And I was like, maybe this is just something you need to do to have a sitcom, but I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't...
Right. Is that still required?
Yeah. I was like, I just don't think that's necessary. I don't know.
Yeah. Emily and I just, I don't watch many of the sitcoms anymore either, but we just finished Handmaid's Tale. We were late on that. And I got to the point at the end where I was like, I think I'm out on this for season two. It was just with everything going on in the world right now, I'm like, I just don't know if I can keep going that dark.
I couldn't even finish the season. I think it's like, it's weird because it feels like sort of like required viewing for like feminist women, but I was like,
but is it?
But with everything going on, like you said, it's just like, I feel like I'm assaulted by rape culture like every hour of the day. So like, I don't need to see a heightened version of it. Like,
I know. And I couldn't decide at times if it was like, is this just an important thing for people to watch now? Or are they sort of, are they using that in a way that I don't appreciate?
Well, I don't know. I also didn't read the book, which is embarrassing, but I think the book is, like, very good.
Yeah.
People
can Emily
say.
Read it.
And I think it's a good thing. It just feels like, for those of us, like, enmeshed in it, we don't necessarily need it. Like,
right.
I think it's the same way that, like, it's good for white people to read, like, Ta-Nehisi Coates or something, but I don't necessarily think, like, it should be required reading for black people who've lived that experience.
Exactly. Yeah, that makes sense.
So, yeah, I just, like, I don't know. I feel like working at Reductress and with everything going on in the world, I just, like, there's so much heavy stuff about being a woman out there that I'm like, I don't need to search for it.
Yeah, there's so much heavy stuff, period, right now. I found myself gravitating toward kind of silliness.
Yeah.
Same. More and more.
Yeah.
Which is fine. There's time for all of it. So watching movies with your family some, did you sit around together and as a family or go to movies?
Yeah, we would sit around sometimes. I'm trying to think of what we would watch. Like my dad would rent stuff like Uncle Buck and like I was a big...
Yeah, that's great.
I was a big fan of Robin Hood Men in Tights for a long time.
Yeah,
that
Mel
was
Brooks.
A big one. Yeah. Uh-huh. What else? I don't know.
Well, that's good though that like my family, we didn't go to movies together and stuff. My dad, I mean, they just weren't that into media. They weren't so into music or movies. It was a little weird.
I can see that. I mean, we didn't go to movies very often, at least not as a family. Like, my parents still have a hard time, even though I think they've, like, they're much more stable financially. They still have a hard time, like, going out to dinner or seeing a movie. Like, it's, like, a big event.
Yeah. That was the same with us, middle, sort of lower middle class.
Yeah.
My parents were school teachers, so if we did go to a movie, which was rare, you know, my mom would sneak in popcorn, and the thought of paying, and this is back when movies were pretty cheap.
Yeah.
The thought of paying, like, for popcorn and sodas and candy for kids. And
right.
That just didn't happen. It was not an option.
My dad would do a thing sometimes where he, like, because my brother was a huge computer nerd, he would, like, lock us out of the house to make sure we got, like, fresh air. and so he would do that, but I would try to, like, sneak back into the house to get changed so I could ride my bike to go buy candy. And he, like, knew what was up, and he, like, wouldn't let it happen. So I was just, like, I would be stranded outside. Just, like,
so you would literally lock the door?
Yeah. I'm sure it was triggered by some sort of, like, annoyance in his life that he was just like, get out of here.
Oh man, those were the days. Can't do that anymore. Unfortunately, I've heard stories about my dad literally sitting on the sidewalk in front of my house when my mom got home, when he was in charge of watching us, because he just couldn't take it. So he would just lock himself out of the house.
Oh, nice.
And would just be out there while we're doing God knows what. All right. So you initially, when we talked about what you were going to pick, said the BBC version of Pride and Prejudice, which is it a movie?
It's a mini-series.
Mini-series. And
that's why I didn't pick it, because you would have, I don't know how many hours it is, but it's long.
Right. and then Notting Hill was another potential pick. And then you landed on Bridget Jones' Diary. And I wrote you back and said, well, you and my wife ought to hang out sometime.
Yeah.
Because her version is actually the Keira Knightley version.
Okay.
What are your thoughts on that one? She loves, like, can watch that one over and over.
I've seen it, and I didn't dislike it, but I think having seen the British miniseries version, it's just hard to appreciate that one because the British miniseries has Colin Firth in it and a bunch of other actors whose names I don't know.
Right.
And they're all really, really good. And I think it's cast in that great way that I think a lot of, like, British shows are cast, where it's not a cast on attractiveness. It's cast on, like, genuine acting ability.
Yeah.
And I think Colin Firth was, like, so striking in that role that the author of the book, Bridget Jones' Diary, like, wrote the book with him in mind as the Mr. Darcy in Bridget Jones' Diary.
Yeah.
So that's why she then cast him also in the movie version of Bridget Jones' Diary.
Yeah, he really has that part locked down.
Yeah.
What's her name? Helen Fielding?
Helen, yeah. Yes. He's so aloof.
He is. Well, first of all, I feel like a dummy because about three quarters of the way into the movie, and I watched this two nights ago in my hotel room here, I texted Emily and I said, did you know this was like a Pride and Prejudice? not remake, but whatever, inspired by? She's like, yeah, dummy. That's why his name's Darcy. I was like, oh, I just thought his name was Darcy because it was an homage maybe to that.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize it was a bit of a modernization.
It's like, it's not an easy read. Like, it's not, like, so direct that you're like, oh, this is obviously the story. But it's obviously inspired by.
So you read the book?
I think I read the book, but I don't. I've read several Jane Austen books, so I think I might have just skipped over that one because I was so familiar with the British miniseries. Which, because the British miniseries is so long, I think they've taken so much of the dialogue directly from the book that you almost don't feel the need to read the book.
Yeah, I hear that.
Yeah, because there's like, I've also seen like a black and white version of Pride and Prejudice that's also really good, and it has pretty much the exact same dialogue in certain points. And that's why I feel like I've read the book. Because the dialogue is so good in that movie. Like the things that the mom says, and I don't know, it's very funny.
Did you read the Bridget Jones book?
I didn't.
Okay.
No. I was really into this movie as a teenager. So I think I was like barely aware of the book at the time and just would rewatch it over and over again.
Well, I watched it for the first time, and I have to say, I loved it.
Really?
Yeah.
I rewatched this week, and as I was watching it, I was like, maybe I should have picked Notting Hill, because there's, like, a lot of very, like, cringeworthy moments, and I was like, I don't know if Chuck's going to hate this.
No. I thought it was great.
Okay.
I thought it was fun, and I don't want to say cute, because that kind of marginalizes it, but it was cute in all the right ways, and... I don't know. I liked it. I know. I think I'd always. I hate to categorize movies as like either like a man's movie or a woman's movie. Mm-hmm. And there probably aren't a ton of dudes that are like, oh yeah, Bridget Jones, one of my favorites. So that's probably why I was like, yeah, Emily, you just go ahead and watch that one.
Right.
But I thought it was really good. And I texted Emily last night. I was like, this is really good. She said, yeah, I know. Of course it is.
That's so funny.
What was your first experience seeing it?
You know, I don't remember the first time. I probably just rented it or something. But at some point, I got my hands on a copy of it or, like, recorded it off TV or something and then just rewatched it over and over again as, like a go-to comfort movie.
Yes.
So, yeah, I don't know.
Well, those are some of the best ones sometimes.
Yeah.
Starring, obviously, Colin Firth, like you said, Renee Zellweger, who... There was quite a bit of controversy at the time when she was cast.
Oh, yeah.
As an American, and I think she had to put on some weight to my eyes, look like a normal person.
Right. The weight thing is very bizarre, both, like, her appearance and what they've listed her weight, because they say what her supposed weight is throughout the movie, and it's, like, 136 pounds, and that's, like, her starting point when she feels fattest, which, like... Right. I don't think, even at my skinniest, I don't think I would get down to 136 pounds. Right. Like, that's just...
It definitely was weird in the message, and I mean, we could talk about that, but the message that it sends, but she put on weight to play the role, and there was a lot of talk about that, and I knew that going into it, and then when I saw her, because I knew they pudged her up, supposedly, and then when I watched it last night, I was like, she looks kind of normal to me.
Yeah, she's, like, still a thin person.
Yeah.
But what's funny, like, watching it now, I can see that, but I think when I was a teenager and I was being fed so many, like, images of women via the media, in my mind, she was kind of chubby. Like, I was like, that is embarrassing.
Yeah.
And so it kind of, like, shows you how warped your mind is by media that I, like, bought it.
Yeah.
And I think also that era of TV especially, I think, is, like, maybe one of, like, the skinniest eras of women in television. It was, like, when everyone was wearing really low-rise jeans, and so you were seeing hip bones all the time and, flat stomachs. And it's, like, when I look back, I'm, like, what a horrible time to be a teenager. Recently, I started trying to watch Entourage as, like, a joke, and every scene just has, like, three models walking by that are just, like, all bones.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, wow, like, yeah, that's what I thought I was supposed to look like as a teenager.
It's funny. I watched Entourage when it was on and liked it, and now I look back and think, why did I like that dumb show? That vapid, stupid show.
It was hard to watch. I didn't get very far.
Yeah. I'm going to let myself up about that one. It stars also not only Hugh Grant, but probably peak Hugh Grant.
Yeah.
Or in that time frame, at least.
Right. I think this is, like, maybe his first role where he switched from, like, good guy to bad guy.
Yeah.
And he, after, I think it's after this, he did About a Boy, which is, like, even more of an asshole kind of thing.
Yeah, I love that movie.
And it's, like... I think it's really cool how he is able to switch between those two.
I like this Hugh Grant better than, and I haven't seen Notting Hill, but, and I don't even think I've seen Four Weddings and a Funeral, but I know the character of the...
Like bumbling.
Yeah, sort of the stuttering, shy, British, nice guy.
Yeah.
But I like this guy better.
Yeah.
Not like him as in I want to be friends with him, but I like I like his acting better.
I like both of them. It feels like he, him is probably somewhere like in the middle of the two.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think I heard one of the, it might have been Sharon Maguire, the director, said that he was definitely closer to the bad Hugh.
Yeah.
than good Hugh.
I could see that.
Yeah. Great hair though in this movie. His hair is so awesome. And then Imbeth Davids, who I've seen in some other stuff.
Which one is she?
She plays Colin Firth's significant other.
Okay. He's like lawyer partner.
Yeah.
But also that relationship, I feel like, is never clearly defined. And it's like,
okay, good.
Like, we're not,
I didn't quite get
to
it.
No.
Yeah.
The weird thing is, it feels like she's supposed to be sort of like mirroring the sister of, oh my God, you haven't seen Pride and Prejudice, have you?
It's been on in front of my face
okay.
a lot.
So in Pride and Prejudice, there Mr. Darcy has a best friend named Mr. Bingley, and
okay.
he has a sister named Mrs. Bingley, Ms. Bingley. And she's a huge asshole.
Uh-huh.
And I think her assumption as, like, the close family friends is that, like, she'll end up with Mr. Darcy.
Right.
And she's always, like, planting seeds of, like, how awful she thinks the main character is.
Uh-huh.
And, like, she's just a huge bitch. So I think that character is sort of meant to mirror her. So it's, like... Without the brother character there, they're just sort of setting it up, like,
uh-huh.
as though it's just, like, assumed that these two are going to end up together because they're lawyer partners or something.
Yeah.
It's, like, very weird. But, yeah... I don't know.
All right. I thought it was a little dense for not quite getting what their deal
yeah.
was.
Yeah. No, because when I rewatched this week, I was like, I still don't quite understand what we're supposed to believe the relationship
right.
is between these two. Because it feels like, I mean, I guess similar to Pride and Prejudice, Colin Firth's character is like never really into her at all.
Yeah.
But she seems to think they're together or something. I don't know.
Even at the end when the parents have the big announcement, they say, you know, he's moving to New York. With his attorney partner.
Right.
And I thought that was going to be like, and they're engaged.
Right.
But they weren't engaged, right?
No, I don't think so. I think the dad is like hoping they'll be engaged.
Yeah.
So, but that again makes it very vague as like, are they even dating? It's never
right.
been established. I also think the plot line of like them being like moving to New York as lawyers for an American firm is like,
mm-hmm.
Is that plausible? I don't know.
New York is the big bully in this movie because there's also the woman from New York that Hugh Grant's character takes up with.
Oh, yeah, that's
true.
She's
from New York.
Yeah.
The New York office.
But would a New York firm ever want to hire a British lawyer? I guess if they're doing, like, international law, but...
I don't know.
It doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't. and then, of course, the great Jim Broadbent and Gemma Jones as Bridget's parents.
Oh, yeah, they're great.
Yeah, and he especially. I mean, they were both great.
Mm-hmm.
But they had the sort of the mirroring subplot of the movie is their relationship kind of falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
And him being cuckolded by a more exciting, I guess you could say, guy.
Yeah.
Which was sad for
Julian, I think is his name.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that... mom character, I think, is like very delightfully annoying.
Yeah.
Similar to the Pride and Prejudice movie, miniseries, where it's like so. It just feels so real the
mm-hmm.
way that she is, like, is so like petty and I don't know, always trying to get ahead in a weird way.
Yeah. Or looking for something better too.
Yeah. In
for her and her daughter.
Yeah. That character in Pride and Prejudice is very like sort of like busybody, like
mm-hmm.
too loud at parties, being like, that man makes £500 a year or something, you know,
right.
like she's like, I'm going to try to match my daughters with that man. And it's just like very obnoxious. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. But.
Well, which is how they kind of start this off with that first party where, well, first of all, that opening credit sequence with her singing All By Myself is really, really fun and funny.
I like that.
It's great. I think everyone's kind of done a version of that when no one's looking. And then after I watched about 30 minutes of it, my first thought was, is this movie about sexual harassment only?
Oh, really?
Yeah, because that's a large part of that first act is Hugh Grant, you know.
Just like hitting on her at work.
Yeah,
stuff.
But and through today's lens, of course, you look at it and think like, oh, my God, you could never send instant messages like that. In an
yeah.
office.
Well, what's funny to me is, like, between that and the, like, uncle character that grabs her ass, like,
oh my
when
God,
I watched as a teenager, it all seemed kind of insane.
Uh-huh.
And when I see it as an adult now, I'm sort of like, yeah, everyone I know has had stuff like that happen to them.
Right.
So it's, like, not, it actually seems less weird now.
Yeah. It is so insane, though, that it does happen like that,
mm-hmm.
that a boss can, I mean, send instant messages about, like, the length of her skirt.
Yeah. Well, also, he's very attractive, so he can get away with it.
Right.
And it's also, I think it's more normalized for, like, women even 10 years older than me, where mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, when we've seen certain, like, Me Too stories come out, I've seen women 10 years older than me be like, that's happened to me, what's the big deal? And, like, women
right.
my age are a little more likely to be like, that's happened to me, but I don't want it to keep happening to people.
Right. So. Well, and exactly, I think that's the progression. And then hopefully where it ends up one day is, like, that should not and will not happen again.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know?
Hopefully.
And then the other thing I noticed, that everybody is smoking in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a weird kind of dated thing to do
mm-hmm.
in a movie where all the characters are smoking all the time.
True.
You don't see that a lot.
Yeah, I think also that it's, like, a more British thing, too, because it's, like, I think New York passed the, like, you can't smoke in bars law right around the time I came here for college, which is, like, 2003.
Uh-huh.
And so my adult life, people were mostly not just, like, smoking around me all the time. But I do I do think Britain was later to that if they I think they did pass those laws.
I don't remember. I was in London a couple of years ago, but I just remember that when I was going to New York at first in the mid to late 90s, it was the worst because these tiny little bars in the wintertime with no ventilation,
right.
It's just everywhere you would go, you would just be used to smelling like that. You know, it was just accepted.
I used to go to a bar when I was underage, and I would hang out with improvisers at this bar, and we would stay till closing, and then they'd close up the bar and we would stay inside, and then they would let everyone start smoking.
Uh-huh.
So it was similar to that, where it was just like a smoke filled room, and I was like, oh wow, yeah, I'm glad this is not allowed to happen all the time.
Yeah, it's crazy that used to be normal.
Right.
And now it's just so, like, if someone lit up a cigarette in a restaurant or something,
yeah,
they would just be, like, tarred and feathered and run out of town.
And can you imagine on airplanes, like, everyone just smoking through, like, a six-hour flight?
I actually was on one flight, a Europe flight when I was, like, 20, where there was a smoking section. It's the only time I've ever experienced it. And it seemed crazy to me back then, even. It was just nuts.
That's crazy.
And then, all right, some of my favorite moments that were just so dumb and funny. And one of my favorite things in movies is dumb humor,
mm-hmm.
Like a dumb joke, like they're riding in the convertible, and then in the next shot, Bridget has that convertible hair,
uh-huh.
that mop of hair. And it's just such a slapsticky dumb joke, but it's just great.
Yeah, she's good, I think.
She was awesome.
Yeah. Her serious expression when she tries to, like, play it cool in those moments, I think uh-huh. is very funny.
Yeah. Yeah, I was very impressed by her comic chops. And then, of course, showing up at the party, oh, holy Jesus, with her Playboy bunny outfit was her line. Just so silly.
Yeah. That scene, among others, I think is so painful. Like,
yeah.
It's just...
It's like the dream of showing up on the school bus naked, basically.
Yeah.
She gets dumped off at this party in a Playboy bunny outfit when no one else is dressed up.
Yeah.
I
love the, it's like some other woman who's like sneaking through the shrubs in her outfit or whatever.
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Someone else at the end of that scene didn't get the message. And
yeah.
She's like in lingerie or something. I love that Fatal Attraction was her heartbreak comfort movie after Hugh Grant cheats on her and she's in the apartment sitting there eating ice cream, watching Fatal Attraction.
Every time I see this, I'm like, oh, I should watch that movie, and I never do.
Oh, you've never seen Fatal Attraction?
No.
Oh, it's so great.
I feel like it's so prominent in culture that you, like, kind of know what happens. So
you do, but you should check it out. It's great. I mean, it is what it is, which is not some great piece of cinema.
Right.
But, yeah, I would recommend it. Because, I mean, there are definitely twists and turns in that movie that you don't know.
Okay.
Just by observing it in popular culture.
Cool.
Oh, another one of the more ridiculous scenes. And this is probably what you're talking about when you were like, oh, God, is Chuck going to even like this? But I did. When she... does the news reporting and slides down the fire pole.
Yeah.
And just exposes her butt on television. It's just so funny and silly.
I'm glad you like that, because I think that's exactly where I was like, is he going to think this is, like, the stupidest movie?
No, I thought it was very funny. You had to be in the right frame of mind for that.
Yeah.
But I was. and with most of these movies, most of them I'd seen before, but I always want to go into it wanting to like it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just no fun to sit here and talk to someone
right.
about something I thought was dumb. this movie was dumb in all the right ways.
Good.
To me. So you shouldn't worry about that. And Colin Firth is a leading man. I never saw it. I don't get his
appeal.
Not really.
I think it's a psychological thing. I think it relates to having sort of like a cold father.
He was so cold in this
because
movie.
I think it's like, yeah, I think it's like it's like a thrill of the chase sort of thing of like wanting to please the unpleasable or mm-hmm. something. Like, yeah, it's funny because I think he's so different from like a Brendan Fraser type who I also am in love with. And obviously you can see my choice of husband in real life is much closer to like a dumb Brendan Fraser than like a
sure.
Colin Firth. But yeah, I don't know. It's like, yeah, I think there's something about that coldness that like you want to believe there's more to it, like mm-hmm. more going on behind, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's also the classic story that you see over and over again of a woman, in this case, and the two men. One is, you know, the bad boy, handsome bad boy, successful, rich, handsome bad boy, and the other is sort of the good guy,
mm-hmm.
even though he was just so cold, it was kind of hard to tell.
I think I also, like, relate to his character in a way, and
to
that's
Colin
why,
Firth.
Yeah, like, it's sort of like, I think I give off that attitude sometimes to certain mm-hmm. people, especially if I'm, like, if I'm in an authority role, because you're sort of, like, doing all this mental math of, like, how are we going to make this happen, and then you just are not, like, you're not focused on, like, bedside manner.
Right.
And, like,
the pleasantries.
Being warm. And so, like, I relate to it in a way where it's, like, you actually sometimes care more than everyone else, but you are, or you feel like you do,
mm-hmm.
but you appear as though you care the least, if
right.
that makes sense. And I think that's something that they're in Pride and Prejudice, I think, that Jane Austen is trying to set up that, like, dynamic between the two characters, because in Pride and Prejudice, I think both him and the female protagonist are both a little bit like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they butt heads, because they're both sort of like a little standoffish.
Yeah.
So I think she's sort of like making a point about pride, I guess, or like being like not like catering to other people or something.
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And even though he is very kind of stoic and almost charmless through a lot of the movie, somehow he manages, even me as a dude in his hotel, somehow when he tells her finally that he likes her just the way she is, somehow that manages to be a really sweet moment.
Yeah.
Even though it doesn't feel like he's earned that.
Right. When I rewatched this week, I was like, wow, this does feel much more unearned than I remember.
Yeah.
And I think in the Pride and Prejudice miniseries, it feels like there's so much more buildup and like hinting at him being an actual good guy that you're
right.
like, okay. But this is sort of just like sprung on her
yeah.
after the fact that she realizes he is good.
Well, and you know the deal, because they just keep bumping into each other all over the place. They have that weird history of knowing each other when they were little.
Mm-hmm.
And what did she pee in his?
She ran around naked in his paddling pool.
Okay. Oh, did she not pee in it? Did I just make that up?
I think so. I don't.
Not sure where I got
that. I don't know.
I don't even know what a paddling pool is.
I think it's just one of those little kid, like, plastic pools, like, yeah. in the yard.
Right. I didn't know they had those over there. The fight scene, well, the blue soup was really funny.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great side gag, just to see anything blue on a plate that you're serving someone. But then the fight scene is awesome. It was so perfectly executed as to... non-fighting sort of British guys
yeah.
apologizing to everyone in the restaurant as they go.
I read somewhere at some point that, like, so she had to gain weight for the movie. And I guess Colin Firth and Hugh Grant both had to get in, like, really good shape for the movie because they wanted make them both be, like, very attractive. Like, so they had, like, a bit of a rivalry on set of, like, just, like, a joking, like, who's hotter sort of thing or something. Uh-huh. So I think they sort of, like, play with that in a fun way in that scene. But I think, like, she would be on set, like, eating donuts and stuff, and they would be, like, trying to look their best,
right,
which I think is nice.
Well, it's one of the great punches, one of the great movie punches when Hugh Grant finally kind of saunters outside, like, what are you going to do? He's like, I want to do this for so long. Like, what are you talking about? And then he just punches him in square in the nose. And that, I kind of thought that was going to be the end of it.
Yeah.
And then they go through this long, kind of ridiculous extended fight scene through this restaurant and back out on the street where they're kicking at each other. And it was definitely a lot of fun, I think. did you see any of the sequels?
Yeah, I think I've seen both the sequels. The second one is, like, one that I would never, ever rewatch. Like, it's just, I think it's on Netflix, but it's, like, it's very painful. It's just, like, I honestly don't even remember what happens. It's just sort of, like, reliving the rivalry. Like, I mm-hmm. think they just sort of, like, reset for no reason and, like, they're both in the mix again. It doesn't make any sense, like, why her character would just give up.
Right.
And then the third one is her having a baby. And so Colin Firth's character is back, and it's sort of like she hooked up with both him and Patrick Dempsey in the same weekend.
Right. McDreamy.
Yes, McDreamy. And that one, I do kind of find it funny because I find Colin Firth very charming, but it's definitely not as good of a movie.
Yeah.
And I don't really love Patrick Dempsey, so I don't find it as engaging to watch him.
Yeah, I didn't, I think it's interesting that they went back to the well after so many years.
Yeah.
But it's a beloved character, and people love, I don't know how the second one did, but I don't know, I think it's kind of cool. It's the only... You don't see a lot of comedic trilogies.
Yeah.
For sure. They're all directed by women, which is kind of cool.
And they all, I think they're partially written by, what's that actress? I'm blanking.
Well, the first one was written by Richard Curtis, Andrew Davies, and then Helen Fielding.
Right. And I love Richard Curtis movies.
What else is that?
He's Four Weddings and a Funeral. And
oh,
like,
okay.
Love Actually, which obviously is kind of cliche, but I like his, like, sensibility.
Uh-huh. You're an Anglophile.
Yeah, a little bit. I think I was really big into BBC America when I was a teen. And, you know, like Monty Python and stuff like that. So
yeah.
I think there's something that feels almost, like, educational about watching this movie because you're, like, learning British slang along the way.
Uh-huh.
And, like, you feel, as a teen, you feel, like, smarter than other people.
One of the great last lines, I think. I'm a big fan of great last lines in movies.
Mm-hmm.
And they finally get that great kiss. Nice boys don't kiss like that. And he goes, yes, they fucking do. So over the top, but it's really, really kind of wonderful.
It's a very, like, Colin Firth line, I think.
It is, and it's very satisfying.
Yeah.
For an audience member, you know?
That's one of the funny things I find about... Again, I'm just going to keep talking about the British miniseries, Pride and Prejudice. But there's so much buildup, and it's like, it's got to be like 8 episodes or something of TV. And then they finally get together, and the end scene is like their wedding, and they kiss. And it's like, it feels so satisfying. And you're like, but it's just like a kiss. Like, it's not even, like, it's
right.
just so prim.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know.
It's so much buildup.
It's so much buildup.
Yeah, I thought actually both of the kisses in this, the kiss with Hugh Grant, that first kiss was like a really good first kiss for a movie.
Yeah.
The camera's really tight. And at first you kind of, I mean, he's a bit of a cad, but he's likable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like as an audience member you're going like, oh, no, don't be with him at all. Because
right.
at this point, Colin Firth has shown no person, no anything.
Right.
Really, other than kind of being a cold fish.
Yeah.
And then the kiss with him, too, is put off and put off. Delayed it as much as they could for, an hour and 45-minute movie. Not 8 episodes on the BBC, but
right.
that buildup does help.
Yeah, and even when they have the fight scene and then she's, like, hovering over him on the ground, you do... for a first time viewing, I feel like you don't know if she's going to get with him or not. Like, you're still...
I didn't know.
You're still not, like, against him fully necessarily. I don't know.
No, I thought it was pretty complex. Like, there weren't any clear... Like, he cheated on her, so he was a dick, but I kind of thought she was going to go back to him there with that heartfelt plea that how much he needed her.
Yeah.
And it was a really strong moment for her to say no, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Yes.
Like, that wasn't good enough for her. For her to be needed by him.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah. They have, so in the miniseries, Pride and Prejudice, which I'm going to keep talking about, they have a character who's like sort of this character, but doesn't hang around as much. His name is Mr. Wickham, and he's played by, I think, Alan Cumming.
Oh,
and
he's great.
He's really great. And so he's sort of like a cad, but also very charming, which is sort of like just the perfect thing for that role where you're sort of like drawn in.
Yeah.
And then you're like, once they flip it, you're like, I hate him so, you know? That seems like a hard role to play.
Yeah.
For most people, I think.
I need to watch that clearly.
Yeah.
I need to watch both versions because this is a great, I mean, the story itself is sort of a classic dramatic story of trying to decide between two people. And that's why it keeps getting told over and over in so many different forms.
Yeah.
You know? So I'll check it out.
Yeah. Well, I like that. I mean, not that this is super rare, but I feel like in a lot of rom-coms, even though they're like a woman's medium, it's still a lot of times it's like the guy that needs to get his act together.
Yeah.
And it's nice when the female protagonist is the one, like we're really on a journey with her and she's sort of figuring it out.
Yeah.
Because I don't know, sometimes I feel like that gets confused in rom-coms and you're sort of like, whose movie is this?
Right.
I don't know.
And this is clearly Bridget Jones's movie.
Yeah.
And her journey and her character arc was so satisfying from being a hard-drinking, smoking, quote-unquote overweight spinster and afraid she's going to turn out that way to kind of finding out who she was and being okay with that. I mean, yeah. It's a little corny, but it was great, you know?
Yeah.
Very satisfying. I'm glad you forced me to watch it.
Great.
So do you feel good about that?
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to finish with two segments here. What Ebert said. Find out what the great Roger Ebert thought. He gave this 3.5 stars out of 4.
Okay, that's not bad. That's
great.
Yeah.
It's funny. Everyone always goes like, oh, what's that half star for? Why didn't it get a perfect rating?
Yeah. I guess you can't give many things a perfect rating.
No. 3.5 stars. He says this, glory be, they didn't muck it up. Bridget Jones' Diary, a beloved book about a heroine, both lovable and human, has been made against all odds into a funny and charming movie that understands the charm of the original and preserves it.
Hmm.
So apparently they did right by the book.
That's good. I kind of miss him, like... I miss those, as corny as it is, like all those 90s movies that are like so heartwarming and heartfelt, like I kind of miss that vibe in movies now.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like it's, I mean, I think sometimes it gets really like schmaltzy, but I think it's nice to sort of like have more heart in movies where I think a lot of the comedies have gotten just really like over the top gag sort of focused.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, the dramas are like, can be like so dark.
Yeah, I feel like Hollywood goes in these big waves of we got to all do the same thing.
Because
like the hard R came back out in vogue with like The Hangover and those movies.
Mm-hmm.
Then everybody had to do their version of that.
Right.
Instead of saying like, well, we can also do like a sweet rom-com every now and then.
Right.
Because totally. These movies are good, you know, it's a good escape.
Yeah, totally. I'm sure though, if I was like in the 90s now or like stuck with those movies, I'd be like, we need some hard R movie, you know, like.
Well, they should just do all of them. That's
right.
My point.
Yeah.
Instead of all piling on and doing the same kind of stuff. And then we finish, as always, with 5 questions. Do you remember the first movie you saw in a theater?
I think it was The Little Mermaid, but it's like very faint memory. I was probably very little.
All right. That's a good one. Do you remember the first R-rated movie you saw?
I don't specifically, but I know that I had a close friend who her sister worked at the video store that was within walking distance of her house. And so we would go over there all the time. And her sister or her mom had put her into the system as being allowed to rent R movies.
Uh-huh.
So we could take out all the R movies we wanted.
That's right. You could do that.
So we watched like everything on the horror shelf, like over the course of a summer or something. Uh-huh. So we watched like all the Leprechauns.
Yes.
And those were pretty intense.
Yeah.
But it's funny because they were so shocking at the time that I think it was like thrilling. But if I think about watching those movies now, it's like so, it would gross me out so much.
You don't get into horror films anymore?
No. I'm like so sensitive these days.
Really?
I don't know. I like occasionally like earned violence I'm okay with. Like,
uh-huh.
If I feel like it has like a real like plot point. But
right.
I don't know. I hate watching violence.
Yeah, that gratuitous stuff.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I think you get older and you get just a little more sensitive to that stuff in general.
Yeah.
And especially having kids.
Yeah, definitely having kids. Like, I know, especially when I was, like, pregnant or with a newborn, I was just like, I can't watch any of this.
Yeah.
It was so alarming.
Well, that's why a movie, like, something like Bridget Jones, that comfort food, it's just great to have that stuff that you can go to in your life. And it's not offensive. It's not, you know, overtly sexual or violent. It's
just soothing.
Yeah.
I also think part of why I'm into British stuff is because I find something very soothing about British scenery.
Mm-hmm.
Like, whether it's, like, countryside or, like, old buildings or whatever, I just am soothed by the surroundings.
Yeah.
So they could be saying or doing almost anything, and I'm sort of, like, locked in, you know, like.
Uh-huh. Totally. They seem to do a lot of, like, strolling.
Yeah, yes.
Which is a great thing. And not like, oh, I got to be somewhere. We're just going to stroll.
Yeah. Or they're just, like, getting rained on in a field, and you're sort of like,
Not
like,
bad.
Yeah.
Were you a Downton Abbey fan?
I was. Although, again, like, I was never really that tapped into the story. Like, it was fine, but I was like, I just love the scenery.
Yeah, that
it's
house.
It's, like, very pretty clothes.
And yeah.
I'll just take it all in.
Yeah, Emily can watch movies that she doesn't even like multiple times if she likes the house.
Oh, wow.
That it's set in.
I get that. I get that. Because some of those rooms on Downton Abbey are so beautiful. And,
uh-huh.
like, as someone who went to art school and was, like, into colors and stuff.
Yeah.
They're, like, the way, like, I can remember a specific room on Downton Abbey that's, like, a teal, like, a light teal with gold trim.
Uh-huh.
And it's, like, such a perfect color, like, palette. I don't know.
But you don't remember what happened in the scene.
I mean, probably not. I don't know.
Yeah.
I also think in a certain sort of, like, eye candy way, a lot of those period pieces, I'm locked in if they just cast attractive men.
Uh-huh.
And so I think it's like Mary's character has like a series of like very attractive love interests.
Yeah. It's like every other week there's a new British hunk coming through the door.
I watched the full season of Victoria on PBS, which has like very attractive casting. And I was telling people, I was like, a woman cast this show.
Uh-huh.
Because that's actually one of my pet peeves about media is like, I feel like so often, you know, they cast like just like a schlubby dude, like a Seth Rogen, and then like the most beautiful woman in the world.
Yep, that's the
pairing.
And,
you know, not that I'm against that, like here and there. It's just weird when that's like the entirety of media.
Yeah.
And you're like, and like, I also am someone who like, I guess in a way I just like enjoy nudity. Like I think it's funny and fun. And like, I went to art school and we would do figure drawing.
Yeah.
And so there's something just like, regardless of the shape or size of a person, I think it's just, like, satisfying to see nudity. And it's, like, not, you don't see it in our culture. So, like, you see all these naked women in media all the time. And I'm, like, why, when do we get to see a naked guy?
Right. Forgetting Sarah Marshall. And Jason Segel shows his schlong.
He threw us a bone.
To the world. Yeah, I think that there's a general feeling that, like, nobody wants to see that.
Yeah, I think that's dumb. I don't know. I think our culture is like so uptight about nudity.
Oh, I don't even mean that. I just mean like just a naked guy.
Oh, a naked guy.
Yeah, like it's, I don't know.
I think they do.
I
think that's one of those things that people won't admit to, but they do want. Like, it's sort of like, I mean, it's like internalized sexism, I think, because like we, It like for like we look at our stats on Reductress because we're, you know, monitoring traffic and stuff. And you can tell the likes we get on Facebook and other social media platforms are very skewed compared to the actual site traffic in terms of gender. So more more men visit Reductress and read articles than would admit to it by liking the site on social media.
Gotcha.
Do you know what I mean? So I think there's a lot of stuff like that that they've started to study about, like, porn and people's viewing habits and, like, what they're into, where they won't say what they're into, but they are into it.
Right. Interesting.
Like, when they've polled people on homosexuality, like, men would not admit to homosexual urges, but they, you know, they, like, could monitor the blood flow to their penis or something and tell that they are responding.
Like, your penis says you're lying.
Yeah.
So it's like break it to you.
More men are bisexual than would ever admit to it.
Right.
So
it's for sure a spectrum.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know how we got here. Nudity.
Yeah. I think I said that no one wants to see a penis and you said, no, we all do.
I think people do. Or I think even if they don't, I think they're not as fazed by it as we think they would be.
Right.
Like it would, It shouldn't be as weird as it is, I think. Like, I'm not, like, I guess, like, obviously I'm a heterosexual woman and so there's part of me that wants it. But even more than wanting it, I think I just want it to be more normalized.
Yeah. I mean, like, in this country, for sure, you grow up, and especially, God, as I grew up, Southern Baptist.
Yeah.
Like, you were taught that that is, like, the dirtiest thing in the world.
And, I mean, my mother-in-law, they have lived in a couple different countries, and they, you know, when they've raised kids in other countries, like, a lot of kids just run around naked.
Yeah.
And that bothers me, too. Like, not that I need to, but the fact that if I were to post, like, nude photos of my kids on social media, it would be viewed as, like,
I know,
me, like, asking for something. Like, it just is viewed in such a weird way where it's, like, it's just a kid. Like, this is just what our bodies look like.
I know. And having a daughter, a 2.5-year-old daughter, it's, there's that innocence, that pre-shame innocence is so, like, you just want to protect it for so long.
Yeah.
Because you know, eventually, something's going to happen to take that away.
Right.
One of the routines in our house when we give her a bath, I usually give the baths, is she thinks it's hysterical to run around the house naked.
Yeah.
As soon as I take her clothes off to put her in the tub, she says, I want to show mom a naked baby. And I know that Emily loves it. I'm like, go show her naked baby. And she runs in there and we all laugh and it's hysterical. And it's just, that's going to go away. That's going to get ruined at some point in life.
We do that too. And my kids will say, I'm naked. They're so pleased.
It's so wonderful.
It's so great. And my daughter is in, like, a real loving bath phase this week. And she's, like, she was doing this thing the other day where she was, like, on her hands and knees. And then she was just, like, slapping her butt into the water over and over again. And it was the funniest thing.
Yeah.
But again, I was, like,
time is fun.
I can't post this on social media because
people
will make up weird things about it.
Like, I know. It's a real shame.
But it's so joyous that, like,
they
love being naked. And why are we taking that from them?
I know. Because then it goes away and then it's turns into a weird, bad thing, supposedly, because we're in America. Boy, we should have a side podcast.
Weird thing in America.
Pride and Prejudice and weird American things. Will you walk out of a bad movie?
Probably not, but it's more like that frugal thing I was talking about of being raised to not waste money. Like, you got to get your money's worth.
Right.
But I have, since I've had kids, I almost never get to a movie.
Yeah, I know.
So if I do, it's like, I really want to see this movie.
And you probably picked a good movie that
you
would not walk out on.
I wouldn't, like, risk it on a dumb movie. So, but I will, now that I have kids, because time is so precious, I will turn things off, like, 5 minutes in all the time and just be like, I'm done.
Yeah. So. Like, nope.
Yeah.
Do you have a guilty pleasure?
I think I've listed them. I mean, this Bridget Jones Diary is one of them. Notting Hill. I don't necessarily feel guilty, but these are movies I would not ask Peter to watch with me.
Right.
So
has he seen Bridget Jones?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, just probably because I've watched it so many times.
Yeah.
So these are all in the mix along with, like, Notting Hill and About a Boy. That was a good one.
That's a good movie.
Yeah. Yeah. What else?
Who was the kid that is now grown up that was in About a Boy?
Oh.
I can't think of his name. I mean, he's
I can't think of his name,
all
but
over
he,
the place now.
He's in X-Men, and I still like him. He's still good.
Yeah, and he grew up to be this, like, great, you know, great-looking, handsome man.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just such a sweet little kid in that movie.
I know.
I love that movie. Well, that was Nick Hornby, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Gotta like Nick Hornby movies. And then finally, Movie Going 101, before you had kids, in the olden days, when you and Peter would get to the movies, what was your routine?
So Peter's more into routine than me. And so his thing is to try to get, sort of like in the middle of the theater, the row of seats that has a railing in front of it. So you can put your feet up on the railing.
That's specific.
Which is, I now have come around to it as like a nice thing. Cause you don't want to be putting your feet like next to someone's head.
Right.
But it is kind of hard to sit like upright in some of those seats without moving your feet around.
I agree.
So that's like one of the routines. I don't really have much other than that. It's like if I mostly will try to avoid concession stand just because of price and sugar. But if I'm hungry, I guess I would get like popcorn or sometimes like a slushy.
Oh,
you do.
All right.
Yeah.
That's nice and indulgent.
Yeah.
It's funny. We both have that thing. It's so hard to get out of your system that, the popcorn's so expensive.
Yeah.
You know? Even though, like, I've got the money to buy the popcorn now. It's just hard to give yourself permission.
Yeah, there are certain things. I don't know. I've definitely gotten a lot more indulgent as I've gotten older, just, like, teaching myself how to be, like, other people.
Yeah.
So I'll do it, but there's still such, like, a thrill of spending money on certain things.
Yeah, and a thrill of a good deal.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, this was on sale.
But I think that, I mean, I'm trying to, like, rewire a lot of that stuff out of me because I think there's a unhealthy side of it. And I think sometimes the thrill of the good deal makes you buy stuff that you don't need because you're just buying cheap stuff. And then, you know, it feeds into that like consumer crap model.
Yeah. And I also got to a certain age where I realized, and this is something that I had to learn on my own, was that you do get what you pay for most times.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's better to spend a little bit more money on something that's actually well made.
Yeah.
And not garbage.
Especially with clothes and shoes. It's like you could have like three crappy shirts that are going to fall apart in the wash, or you could have like one nice shirt.
Right. Yeah. All right. This is great.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on, Beth. How about that, folks? Bridget Jones' Diary, a movie that I had long ignored because I thought it was just a chick flick, and it turns out it's just a well-written, fun, wonderfully acted comedy. Hit all the right notes, just as silly as it needed to be in the right places, has some great dumb humor in the right places, and I really enjoyed it, and I really enjoyed talking to Beth Newell about this. Beth is great, and it was a lot of fun, and it was interesting, some of the side conversations we got into on this one, too. So that was kind of one of my favorite parts. So I hope you all enjoyed it, and thanks for listening. And until next week, why don't you get out of your comfort zone and watch a movie you might not think you like this week? Movie Crush is produced, edited, engineered, and scored by Noel Brown from our podcast studio at Pond City Market, Atlanta, Georgia.